Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and David Garrard.
Hey, welcome into Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday here at Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. David Garrard in the fold. How did we had a lot of fun last Friday. I had a lot of fun anyway, talking about Halloween and getting ready for the weekend. How did it go for you and your family?
Oh, it was great. We had a great time. We were all decked out, and all the kids had a blast. My 2 and 3 year old little girls, they stayed up till about 10:30, 11 o'clock, and there was no problem from them. So it was a good night.
Good, man. It's dwindling in my neighborhood. I gotta admit, it is just, you know, you don't see as many kids walking around now. There is a nice development that has gone up in relatively close proximity, and I think a lot of parents are driving
going over there
to trick or treat. Over there. Hey, we have good candy too, man. I can afford Snickers bars, Tony, and I'm giving the good stuff out too.
I heard you were giving out apple slices, though.
I was not giving out apple slices. I may have given out a few packs of dental floss, however, at the end of the night. But not only that, but less kids trick-or-treating and less houses participating too. That's the bummer, man. Come on. You know?
I know. It's sad. I don't understand it either.
Just buy a bag of lollipops and give them out and be part of the evil spirit of Halloween. Well, we're into November. We'll see what the Jags can do in this month as they head up to take on the New York Jets. Dave, in your experience, we've probably talked about this over the years, but is momentum a real thing, A? And if it is, what does a bye week do to interrupt the flow if you have any momentum? Realizing they've only won one in a row, but Nevertheless, for them, that's something that they haven't had many chances to gather momentum, the Jags.
Well, momentum is a real thing, and it's good to go into the bye week with momentum because you go in with a smile on your face. You go in a little bit happier knowing that you're working on things, you know, in a good mood, in a good spirit. So you're able to get more done, actually. When you go in with just a bitter taste in your mouth, you're just still so frustrated from that past game that it has you, you know, losing a little bit of focus starting out the bye week because you're upset. You're going into your bye week upset, and you're not going to enjoy it as much as you want to. And so I think it allows you to go in and guys can get a little bit fresher. Coaches will be a little bit more lenient with them and allow some guys who do have a little nicks and bruises to, you know, hey, just take a few plays off and just we want you to rest up so that because coaches are a little bit more confident with their guys now, they're coming off that win. But you don't want to, you know, take the, you know, your foot off the pedal. You still want to be able to come out and probably this week's preparation. They are putting that, you know, foot back to the pedal and applying more gas so that they can come out in this game sharp and start the second half of the season, you know, off on a good note. And they need to go on the road and win a ball game. And I think this is a good chance for them to do that. You know, they're not playing Seattle, they're not playing on the West Coast anywhere. They're not playing a team that's so dominant that, you know, there's no chance. There is a real chance here. And so it for their confidence, it'd be great for them to be able to go up there and get a win.
In your time, do you recall what it felt like? Did it feel different to you? Did your legs get fresher with having that 1 week off? Just how much of an impact is that? Because the Jags right now, their injury report is pretty short. You know, they're as healthy as they've been in a while. How much does that extra, just having that week where you're not getting into those 30 or so odd car crashes, you know, in a 3 hour period, impact you?
It does. It allows your legs and your body to freshen up a little bit, but more so your mind. You know, you've been going since the beginning of you know, training camp nonstop, and so this is your first time that you actually get to take a break on a weekend where there's no football for you, and you can just do whatever you want. You can sit on the beach with your family, you can just take your mind off things, and so that's where it's really good. It's those guys that get the bye week, like on week 4 or 5, when it's so early, you're like, you know, we got so much football left to play. Or guys that get bye weeks, you know, so late in the season that
you're really beat up by the time.
Exactly. So right in the middle is just perfect. And, you know, you've played a, you know, full half of football before. You get that break. Now you get to go get ready for the second half of football. And, you know, hopefully it's come at a perfect time for them so that they can, you know, coming off this win with that momentum, just go right through the bye week. And usually going through your bye week, you can design a few plays to be ready to come out and have against this Jets team that they might not be expecting. And so It's a good chance for you to get a leg up on those guys.
Yeah, we'll find out. It's interesting the way the week has played out with the Jets. We thought at the beginning of the week they may be going to Bryce Petty at quarterback, their third quarterback. As it turned out, Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to be able to go, at least try to go, with the injured left thumb ligament.
Yeah.
Have you ever had anything that's caused
you issues?
I
had the same thing. I had that my last season in 2010. We played up in New York, and I got hit on the last few drives where we were trying to go down and score for the win, and I was just getting hit left and right. And one time I got hit, and I was trying to protect myself by putting my left hand to the ground, and I got rolled on, and it was in a position that wasn't good, and I could feel the crunching in my wrist. It was so bad. And so that whole next week, I didn't take any snaps. I would just hold the ball behind the center and then, you know, hand off at times. Sometimes I would do the backwards handoff,
right,
like Palmer did. I remember when he was doing that.
How difficult is that? I mean, is that a big deal?
It's just weird. You know, you've been handing the ball off, you know,
it's
a
not
certain
natural,
way.
Right? Because
it's not. You've been handing it off a certain way, you know, since high school. And now you're telling me to hand off, you know, with the backhand of my one hand. And it just, you can do it. It's just super uncomfortable. You might come out a certain way thinking that you're going to hand it with your left hand, and all of a sudden you think, oh, I can't because that hand is bad. But just the pressure alone, being able to hold on to the ball, getting yourself off the ground. I mean, you don't, you're going to stick that hand out there when you have a 300-pound lineman bearing down you because you're thinking self-preservation,
right,
protect myself. And you're not thinking, oh, this is my bad hand, so I can't really stick it out there. When you're out there, you're just flying around doing the best you can, trying to not get yourself killed. And so he's going to stick that hand out there to protect himself, and there's no telling how long it's going to last because it's just going to keep getting weaker and weaker, and now he's not going to be able to go under center. He probably won't go under center at all because that hand is so bad, because that hand gets a lot of the brunt of the ball when it is snapped to him, and so that thumb – would just keep getting hit over and over again. So he'll probably be in the shotgun. But then also just catching the ball is going to be tough for him in the shotgun. So there are going to be some good chances to get the ball out of his hands, to get some turnovers.
Let's hope we get some 300-pounders near Ryan Fitzpatrick to cause him to use that hand to help defend himself. Today, we're going to ask you, as we do every Friday, for your keys to victory for the Jacksonville Jaguars. You can tweet us your responses if you so choose. The Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day: what are the three keys to victory for the Jags this weekend? At MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at David Garrard 9 on Twitter, and of course, you've got the 1010XL, Jaguars Today Facebook page open for business, as well as calling in at 641-1010 and using the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at the same number, 904-641-1010. We'll get to your experience. I think from a mental aspect of playing quarterback when you've got a lockdown corner, and if Revis is still in that category for you and how you approach that, do you need to challenge him? Do you just look to stay away if you've got good options elsewhere? We'll talk about that throughout the course.
Well, you remember
we
went up there and played against those guys and won.
I do. So you've got.
I can tell you the game plan we had going in.
You've got firsthand experience, and we'll see if we can pull that out and try to extrapolate anything that the Jags may be able to do this week to have some similar success against the New York Jets. David Garrard's here. Fat Tony's here. I'm Mike Dempsey. It is a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Just getting started. Love to talk to you today. We've got Bob Babbage coming up. He spoke yesterday. Gus Bradley, some comments he made last night on the Gus Bradley Show that'll be of interest to you. Rich Cimini covers the New York Jets for ESPN's NFL Nation. He'll join us about 30 minutes from now as well to preview the Jags Week 9 opponent. Jaguars Today live at Everbank. Just getting started on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I think we're looking at that. You know, he's a three-down back. You try to have certain packages up for certain guys. You know, hopefully we see D-Rob get some more reps and Bernard Pierce, guys like that, take some of the load off of them. You know, whether they're in specific, you know, situations like goal line, you said, we'll have to wait and see.
Not going to tell you, Gus Bradley, as in, although we'll take a look at that. He was asked yesterday, Gus was, about T.J. Yeldon getting goal line carries, and certainly didn't work out well for Toby Gerhart in that capacity. We discussed that last week with you, but we'll see. And I wouldn't expect Gus to say, here's what we're going to do. We're going to line up on first down. We're going to give it to TJ out of the eye. And if that doesn't work, then we're going to go with a simple, you know, bootleg looking for Julius dragging the back of the end zone. Obviously, they're looking at a lot of different things. We'll see if they come into play this weekend. Well, hopefully they get a chance to get some goal line carries.
I think they'll still they won't put Gerhardt up there every time, four downs in a row, but they're still going to give him a chance.
Give him
he's
maybe
still
first
big.
Crack.
He's still physical. You know, it might have just been just not very good blocking, not very good push, that kind of stuff that didn't allow him to get an end zone. And I don't know how much TJ would have, you know, pushed the pile anymore. But you could expect him to be able to bounce the ball sometimes, that kind of stuff. But they're not going to just say, Toby, you know, at the goal line every time. They're going to give him a chance, but they're also going to give Yeldon a chance too. They did see that it didn't work, so
right.
They're not going to be dumb and just keep butting their head against the wall.
You would hope they would reach that conclusion that everybody else has at this point in time. Dave, you have played in a very similar scenario here, going up to take on the Jets with the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2009. I'm looking at the numbers right now. As you recall, first let me ask you, Revis, from what you've seen, and you're not in the mode where you're breaking down film every single week like you used to be, but from what you've been able to gather watching him in the last couple of years, how close is he to the guy who was truly one of the rare shutdown guys? If you go back to Darrell Revis, had about a 2-year stretch where number one wide receivers did nothing against him. I mean, it didn't matter if it was Calvin Johnson or Andre Johnson or Steve Smith or Chad Johnson and all the Johnsons. He shut them all down. How far removed from that, and where does he is he still among the upper crust of cornerbacks in the NFL?
Well, he might not be Revis Island. He's more like Revis Peninsula.
Okay.
You know, so he still has a – he's still –
he's been saving that one.
Yeah, that's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
We can still – there is a route out. There, it may be congested, but you can find your way from here.
So there's – you can definitely get some passes thrown against him, but he's still locking down guys pretty good. You know, you're still – he didn't shut off the whole side of the field anymore, but if you throw a ball that's errant at all, he's going to make a play on it. He does not – give you many chances to make mistakes and get away with it. He's still pretty good. I've seen a lot of double moves on him. I've seen a lot of routes being run where you can't tell who's the receiver and who's the DB, but then he still will give you those opportunities to make those plays now.
Well, what was, as you recall, the game plan for you guys? Because in 2009, he's probably a lot closer to that peak performance level. Do you remember what the meetings were like and what the discussion was like going into that game?
Yeah, I mean, so when your coaches are talking to everybody, hey, you know, this is a great defensive back, but we're not scared of him. We're going to, you know, go out there and make some plays and do our best, whatever we can. If you're open, the ball's coming to you. Then your coaches kind of pull you to the side and they say, hey, we're going to stay away from this guy as much as we can. You know, like I said, we're not afraid of him, but, you know, I can't let the receivers.
Let's not be dumb,
yeah,
too.
I can't let the receivers think, you know, we don't care. We're just going to throw it all day at him. So, you know, you got to be smart about things. And that's what they were telling me. Just be smart. You know, if we have certain routes and you feel like it's a good advantage for us, then make the play. Sometimes you got to look to see if your receiver wins, and you normally don't do that. You normally don't want to see if your receiver wins because you're late if you have to do that. But sometimes you have to see, okay, he's playing off. We're running a slant here. It's a great opportunity to get the ball to him. Sometimes they can jump it and make those kind of plays. But if you look and he still kind of has a little back pedal going, then you can put the ball on him and get at least a completion on the guy.
They say that, you know, cornerbacks have to have short memories, right? They mess up a play. They've got to be able to come right back and have that ultimate confidence. But when you do have a little bit of success against a guy who's used to not giving up much, do you see sometimes he gets frustrated a little bit, or can you take advantage of that?
Usually guys at that level, guys with his abilities, no, because you might make a play, but you make one play, he makes his one play, it's a pick to the house.
Right.
You know, so.
Right, a 17-yard completion, not quite the same.
Exactly.
Right?
You're feeling pretty good, like, okay, I got a completion on him. I'm not going to just sit here and keep picking on him, because his one play is a play to the house. And
game
so
changer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then you've got so many other weapons that you can go to. that, yeah, okay, you take that one guy away. You know, I'm going to go to Julius Thomas. I'm going to go to Mercedes. I'm going to go to Alan Hearns on the other side, because I think Cromartie is a guy, not saying that you can pick on, because he's kind of the same way, too. You'll get a big chunk, but that one time he makes that play, it's a game-changing play. But he's given up more plays defensively than he is making plays for his defense.
You were 16 of 26 in that football game against the New York Jets for 221 yards. You threw a touchdown to Mike Sims-Walker, who you told me Revis was guarding him that day. You were 3 of 7 throwing to Mike Sims-Walker, but probably feel fortunate that you got a touchdown and you didn't have any turnovers on the
day.
So that was a big deal. And you also ran for a score in that game, I believe. Pretty solid all-around performance for you in there. And most importantly, you guys came away with the victory. That was the game that, as you reminded me, Maurice Jones-Drew went down at the one-yard line, enabled Josh Scobie to kick a point-blank field goal, which was the right football play to make. And ironically enough, then Maurice gets up in the post game and apologizes to all his fantasy football owners who had him on their team for not scoring the touchdown. Put him on the radar of SiriusXM's new, brand new fantasy station. And ever since then, Maurice and I have been doing Friday nights for the last 6 years. So thank you. And thank you and Maurice both for conspiring to defeat the Jets in such a fashion. And pretty interesting stuff. You know, for the Jags, you would expect that Revis just takes Allen Robinson, right? Wouldn't that be your, or is he the kind of guy at this stage where maybe he'll take Robinson for some of the time, maybe he'll take Julius depending on what area of the field they're in? I mean, is he going to move around a little bit? What do you think?
Yeah, I think usually what happens with those kind of guys, if you have a dominant receiver, then they're going to put him on him and tell him just shadow him the whole game. If you have guys that are on equal level like Allen Robinson and Allen Hearns, you know, both those guys can make plays. So they'll probably just say, you know what, whoever comes to your side, you take that guy, I'll take the other guy. But then you got to think there's going to be times where, yeah, this feels like a Julius Thomas type situation here. We're down here in the red zone. You know what, I'm going to go take him. Everybody else cover the receivers. We're bringing the nickel, that kind of stuff. So it's all about their game plan and how they work things. But you could definitely see if they feel like Julius is getting off in the red zone, down the if he's making the plays, then they'll say, hey, you know what, can you go guard this guy? We need help on him. Our linebackers aren't doing it. Our safeties aren't doing it. But I want to say they'll probably just play it all equal until somebody's having that kind of explosive game, and they'll say, hey,
maybe
can you go shut
point.
Him down, please?
Yeah. Can you please take care of that? Hopefully by that time, Tony did allow a couple of touchdowns to Allen Hearns before he switches over
exactly
to that side. Let's hear a little bit from Gus Bradley yesterday on the Gus Bradley Show last night, because we got a lot to get to. We won't get to all of it right now. But Gus was asked by Jeff Logman last night about self-scouting, something that they do, you know, in terms of watching their own film instead of just the opponents and finding tendencies and areas where they can improve, and how much of that is done with the offense.
Offensively, there's certain areas that you're looking at, you know, and it's hard, Logs. I'd like to tell you all the areas, hey, you know what, we weren't very good on third and one, so now this is what we're going to do. But, you know, for a competitive standpoint, I don't want to get into too much detail, but you look at situations, you know, you look at third downs, you look at red zone, you look at goal line, you know, obviously, it's a situation that popped up. And you look at, okay, what are the areas, you know, what can we do differently? What are our strengths? What are our weaknesses? How would we, you know, block this differently? Or what would our mindset going into this situation? And you analyze all those. And you get some good statistics. And that's good on paper. And then a lot of times, after you get on paper, you follow it up with film watching.
Tyler, I don't know what you're saying. So
yeah, there's a mic issue with Tony. I couldn't hear him at all. What was he trying to say?
Oh, he was saying, let's play the next cut with Gus Bradley. Actually, he said it more elaborately than that, but he talked about, you know, is self-scouting only a bi-week thing? Gus addressed this last night, or if it's something that goes on year-round.
No, like, now you're talking offensively. So offensively, each week they go back and they self-scout. You know, and that's one of my jobs as the head coach is I go back and look at our offense and I'll game plan or put together a plan. If I was a defensive coordinator, how would I attack our offense? And this is the analytics I would try to use against our offense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it takes some time to do that, but generally Monday night, Ole and I will sit down and I'll go through it and say, hey, here's some things that are popping up. Here's how we would try to attack it and try to use it to our advantage.
All right. Can you hear me now, Tyler?
Oh, yeah. Got you loud and clear.
Oh, that's hello, Tony nice. Smith. Hi, guys.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, that's weird. Gus Bradley last night talking on the Gus Bradley Show talked about finally having a healthy injury report.
I think early in the season when we had quite a few injuries we looked at and we knew when Dave and I sat and talked about, we knew there was this time that was going to come when we could get a lot of guys back. These weren't long-term injuries, but they were 3, 4, 5 week injuries. And, you know, so we, you know, I think at this point in time, we kind of had an idea. Can we stay healthy enough that at the bye week, those guys that were injured are coming back and we had no further injuries? And it kind of came to place, this week.
Well, they get more pieces in place. Then you start to look at they've had them for a few weeks now, but as they start to play a little bit more together, you've got the two receivers who are doing so well on the outside, Bortles with Yeldon now, 2 100-yard games in his last three. And the question is, can you get on the same page with Julius Thomas? For the most part, I know they've lost Brandon Linder, but I think they've had felt like they had some good depth on the interior of the offensive line, so you haven't noticed it being a glaring issue for them. You know, and I think it's one thing that has kept Marquise Lee on the active roster. Right? A lot of people said, why don't you just put him on IR? Well, if you don't have to, right, you're going to deactivate guys on game day anyway. If there aren't a bunch of guys that have injury concerns that you have to put them down because they can't play, that keeps the door open for Marquise Lee a little bit longer, right?
Yeah, and I just think his potential, you don't want to, you know, you don't want to put him away when he could give you, you
I'm
know,
with you, man.
5 or 6 good weeks. And
even if you get a month, the last month of the season out of it.
And he starts to develop, and you see this is what we thought we had. Now that he's healthy, he's given us exactly what we want, and we know going into the next season that he is going to be hopefully a valuable weapon for us. I wouldn't shut him down because he definitely has the potential to come back and give you a few games, and you can at least be able to evaluate what you have in this guy. But definitely, I think being able to get back and get healthy at this time of the year where you have a chance to still go compete for something, I think it's great for this team, but they have to be able to put some games together to get some wins. So if they don't, then it's just, oh, we got guys healthy, but we still can't
right.
win.
Right. You got to capitalize on it ultimately, and it needs to start quickly.
Well, and that doesn't make his absence any less frustrating for the team or the fans, and you can understand them being upset with the fact that Marquise Lee can't get out there. Heck, Mike, yesterday when the injury report came out, we're both sitting in the studio over at 9090 Hogan Road, and it's like Marquise Lee, the only one missing practice. And we're like,
so why can't it be Sample?
Right. Why can't it be anyone but Marquise Lee being the only one that's not available to practice? It's just where he is right now, and I'm with both of you. If they get a month of good Marquise Lee, that's enough for me to hold out hope.
Because, Tony, it's not just about helping them win games in December, which would be great if he can, but it's about this guy doesn't need to have a lost year, his second year in the National Football League. Something, let's have something to build on for Marquise Lee, if nothing else, going into the offseason, and you can then envision, wow, we got this, we got this, we got this, we got this, and all of a sudden you got a lot of skill guys that you're pretty excited about.
He's shown so much when he has been out there, which is why people are, you know, frustrated with him, because he shows you the ability that he has, but then he's back hurt again the following week. So if you can get this guy completely 100% healthy, like you said, give you a good month of, okay, we see exactly what we thought we were seeing, and you can go into the offseason healthy, it just makes the dynamics of the offense and the team that much better going into next year.
All right, let's take a time out here. We got plenty more from Gus Bradley coming up, as well as some from Bob Babich speaking yesterday, the defensive coordinator of the Jaguars, on what that side of the football will face with the New York Jets attack. But coming up next, we'll welcome in Rich Cimini, who covers the Jets now for ESPN's NFL Nation, a guy you know pretty well from your days up there, I'm sure, Dave, as well. And we'll get to the bottom of who is healthy, who's not, who's back in the lineup for the Jets this week, and are they continuing to experience a post-Patriots hangover after going out to the West Coast and getting beaten by the Oakland Raiders. That's coming up. It's Cardinal and Cadillac Friday. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Six defensive backs for the Raiders, third down and five for Fitzpatrick. Pressure. He gets away, he needs the 36, and he's got the first down. And he hits the deck, Woodson brings him down, 43-yard line. Scramble of 12 on third and five, another Jets first down in the opening drive. As we see a player, Fitzpatrick, who is on a knee.
When you play with your hand taped up, you face a little bit of limitation, but the mechanics of quarterback look almost the same. He'll be limited a little bit because of the protection on his hand, but it hadn't made a difference in practice.
All right, excuse the ratchet in the background, but that was the TV call with Kevin Harlan from CBS on the call of Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Are they using like 40-style cameras still
was
in
that
New York?
What it was? They're advancing
Pink,
the film.
They had to
maybe
replace the...
Not sure, but that was Jets offensive coordinator Chan Gailey, courtesy of NewYorkJets.com, talking about Fitzpatrick and will he be limited with the hand taped up. Well, let's find out. Rich Samini is the longest tenured beat writer in New York Jets history. He's been doing it since 1989, most recently with ESPN's NFL Nation coverage. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, and Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL. What's up, Rich? Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you doing today?
We are doing well. You know, Dave was just explaining to me a moment ago that he had a very similar injury, and for him, it was very difficult to deal with. Maybe Fitzpatrick's not as severe because they already have announced, and they did it, I guess, a day or so ago, that he would start this weekend. What are you hearing about how restricted, if at all, he will be this week?
Well, we only watch a very small portion of practice, as you guys know, but what I've been able to see from, I have seen him take snaps from direct, you know, from under center. I have seen him use his left hand on handoffs. So, you know, he seems, but again, that's in a, you know, a very light, casual drill, I mean, not the intensity of a real football game. So, like Chan Gailey said, I think there'll be some limitations just because of the awkwardness of having a glove on his hand. But I think this shows more than anything just on how entrenched he is as the starter. You know, I mean, I don't think Geno was a consideration this week as long as Ryan was able to get on the field.
You know, they go head-to-head with the Patriots a couple weeks ago, the Jets do. Last week in Oakland, it felt like they just didn't show up for that game in a lot of ways. You've had players in that locker room this week calling out teammates for not giving full effort in that game against Oakland last week. What Jets team do you expect to see on the field on Sunday? More like what we saw 2 weeks ago against the Patriots, or do you feel like they are hitting a bit of a lull and maybe injuries have something to do with that in this 2015 season?
Definitely think injuries have something to do with it. They just looked like a really tired team last week against Oakland. Maybe it was the travel. I think it was probably some injuries too. They just looked a step slow, and they had more than 20 missed tackles in the game, which is really hard to believe. It's just mind boggling. And you're right. There were some players, you know, speaking out. No one calling out anyone individually, just as a group saying, hey, you know, we weren't hustling. We were loafing. So I think you're going to see a refocused, much more intense Jets team, especially on defense this week. Pretty intense practices from what I've understood this week. And they've been working on tackling as much as they can under the rules. And they've been running a little extra. I think perhaps some punitive measures. But Todd Bowles has really ratcheted up the urgency this week. I think they'll come out looking like a different defense.
ESPN's Rich Samini here covering the New York Jets and talking Jets football with us. Rich, from my vantage point, it looks like, for the most part this year, when Chris Ivory's had it rolling, this Jets team has had success. Now, he didn't get it going last week. Was it something Oakland did specifically to slow him down? How much did they miss Nick Mangold in that effort? And do you agree with that Ivory is maybe the best barometer to this team's success so far this year?
Yeah, and if you ask any player, they'll tell you the exact same thing. You know, he's the guy who makes it go. You know, he really is their engine, and he's been in a two-game slump. I think against the Raiders, they obviously had to get away from the running game because they fell, you know, so far behind. But even his numbers 17 yards, 15 carries, probably his worst game as a Jet. I think what teams have done the last couple of weeks, and maybe the Patriots started this trend, you know, they're taking away the edge. I think they're much more conscious of his outside speed and trying to get him turned, funneling everything toward the middle. And I know he's talked about that, and I think that's been a factor. And then not having Nick Mangold in the middle was huge last week. They started Wesley Johnson. It was his first NFL game ever. And so he did, all, you know, as well as could be expected, but it's a big drop-off from Nick Mangold. So I think that was definitely a factor as well.
Rich, let's talk about Cromartie a little bit. Do you feel like Father Time is starting to catch up with him a little bit, or do you still think he has the same kind of playmaking abilities that he's had in the past, or, you know, is he starting to lose a step?
Well, if you just turned on the tape of last week's game, you'd say Father Time has won the battle here. He had a rough game. I mean, he gave up a couple of touchdowns, and he admitted it afterwards. I mean, I could say what he said, but I don't think it would get on the radio, you know, to describe, you know, he was pretty candid describing how poorly he played. And, but I don't know. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. He is 31. He's had a couple of hiccups this year in games, but he has also had a couple of really good games. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think he'll bounce back this week. I'm sure the Jaguars will test him. I mean, why wouldn't they? Want to go after a guy like that, but I think he's going to be okay. I don't think this is the end of Antonio Cromartie.
Sticking with that Jets defense here for a moment, they bring in Leonard Williams in the first round. Still, they've been really effective against the run, but haven't been very good as far as getting to the passer and bringing them to the ground. They're towards the bottom of the league in sacks. Can they do anything to change that in the short term with what they have available to them?
Yeah, their sack production is way low, but I think if you look at their pressure percentage, I think they rank higher in the league, you know, probably in the top 10 in the league and getting pressure on the quarterback. They pretty much blitz 50% of the time. It's a Todd Bowles trademark. They're going to come after you. They have not gotten that pressure in the last two games. So one reason was Tom Brady, because he's Tom Brady. He just gets rid of the ball so fast. And last week, Derek Carr was really good. I mean, they just had a great game plan, and the Jets were just on their heels the entire game. I think it was an eye-opener for the players and the coaches. So you're right. They definitely have to get more pressure, and it's not like they're trying. They're not trying. They're just blitzing on every down, but they're not getting there. I think they're going to need more out of Leonard Williams, more out of Sheldon Richardson, and, you know, they're getting a good year out of Muhammad Wilkerson, but they're just going to need more from the other guys.
I wanted to ask, are they using Revis to just shut down the number one receiver, and do you think they're going to maybe put him on Allen Robinson this week or just kind of play whoever comes to his side?
Yeah, they have been. Last week he was on Amari Cooper, I would say, 90% of the time. And Amari, you know, it's funny, the first play of the game they went deep to Amari. It was kind of a message, I think, to Darrell. It was an overthrow, but Darrell did a good job. I think he held Cooper to his lowest production of the year. So I think Darrell would probably match up with, you know, Robinson better. Hearns is more of a, you know, a bigger guy, about 6'3". That is more of a Cromartie type matchup. So I think you're right. I think if they did, you know, do it individually, it would go that way. But yeah, they have been using Darrell most of the time against the other team's number one.
Rich Zamini here with us for a couple more minutes as we preview the Jets hosting the Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday. Rich, you look at the wide receiver core for the Jets, banged up. I know Brandon Marshall got into limited practice yesterday. Eric Decker seems to make a habit of not practicing much but performing on game day. You expect both of these guys to be available from what we know at this moment?
I do. I think Marshall will definitely be there. He's pretty beat up, but, you know, he's a pretty tough guy. And Decker, this knee injury, it's been going since week two. He's missed a considerable amount of practice time. I think he'll probably practice limited today. They should be getting out on the field as we speak now. And if he does not practice at all today, then that would raise a red flag. Everything I've heard the last 2 days is that he's going to give it a go on Sunday.
You know, we talked a moment ago about Chris Ivory being kind of the engine for this Jets offense, but they bring in Brandon Marshall in this offseason. What kind of impact has he had, not only on the field, we've seen the kind of numbers he's putting up, but in that Jets locker room this year?
Yeah, the numbers are just incredible. I mean, I was just, in fact, I was looking this up before you guys called. His number, I think it's 600-something receiving yards. He's off to the fastest seven-game start for any Jet receiver since the merger in 1970. So,
wow.
So, you know, he's putting up some crazy numbers, at least in relation to the Jets. And in the locker room, he's been good. I mean, you know, he came with that reputation of being a problem guy. Kind of followed him everywhere he's been. He's been in a few stops in the NFL, but you know, I haven't heard anything negative about him. I think he's trying to fit in. Before Geno got popped in the face, I mean, he was really helping Geno, you know, trying to, you know, get together with him in the off season. They actually lived together for a while to try to build up some chemistry. He's got a good rapport with Ryan Fitzpatrick. So you haven't really seen that side of Brandon. I think maybe it's maturity at this stage of his career, and probably just wants to win. I mean, the guy's never been in a playoff game in his career. He's been playing for 10 years. So I think that's probably driving him right now.
All right, Rich, we'll wrap up with this as the two teams get together at 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. We're not crazy. We understand teams around the league. We look at it from a Jags perspective. Can the Jags beat this team? Can they compete? I'm sure teams around the league are saying, wow, Jags are coming in. This is a game we should win. From the Jets' perspective, though, what do you think is the biggest threat that the Jaguars pose to them? What aspect of their attack, either offensively or defensively, that they need to be the most concerned with?
I think the quarterback, I've heard nothing but positive things about Bortles in the Jets locker room this week. They just feel that he's really made so many strides, you know, in the past year. So I think they're worried about Bortles throwing the ball over the top of their defense. I heard this week about players talking about the two receivers and how they like to get vertical passing the ball. So I think that's a concern for the Jets. I think the other way, I think the quickness on the Jacksonville defense is a concern. I think they expect to get an 8-man box to stop Chris Ivory. But I do think the Jets will be able to make some plays in the passing game. I think they're going to get good matchups on the outside with Decker and Marshall. And I think that'll probably be the difference in the game.
All right, we will find out as they play it out this Sunday. Rich Cimini has been on the beat since 1989 with various publications, now most recently with ESPN's NFL Nation coverage. Rich, we appreciate you taking the time out to join us. Folks can follow you on Twitter if they don't already, at Rich Cimini, C-I-M-I-N-I, for Cimini. Rich, thanks so much for the time. Enjoy Week 9.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, you got it. There you go. Guys, 8 men in the box. With this secondary, can you commit to, I mean, look, you don't want Chris Ivory to get rolling, right? But at the same time, I mean, Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker are Pro Bowl caliber wide receivers, at least they have been at various points in their career. What's the number one thing you're trying to take away from the New York Jets this week?
You're trying to take away the run game, because that can just, you don't want another team to impose their will on you like that. You make a few plays in the passing game, that happens. But when a team just hands the ball off and they're 5 yards in the cloud of dust the whole game, I mean, that wears you down.
And Ivory's one of the most physical runners in the league.
He is.
When he is going, it really feels like they're imposing their physical will on another team.
And he doesn't know how to run any other way. I mean, this is a guy that I still stay in contact from the team up there. He's a good guy. But he's just a hard-running guy, and that's what he does. You know, it doesn't matter if three guys are converging on him. He's lowering his shoulder pads, and he's just, he's going to run through them and get another 2 or 3 yards out of it. But he is a guy that sometimes he's not having the best day, and hopefully we get that Chris Ivory that is struggling a little bit.
And has been for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I think what happens to him is he just gets worn down. I mean, there's so much you can take. I'm honestly surprised that a guy like Lynch, Marshawn Lynch, runs the way he does. But you've seen him. He wears down, and he's had a couple.
Sometimes he misses the first quarter.
Exactly. You know. But that's just human nature. The body will wear down eventually.
You are who you are, though. I don't think Chris Ivory could run any other way. It's just how he's wired right now. All right. With David Garrard, with Tony Smith, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Thanks again to Rich Cimini from ESPN covering the New York Jets for a look at the Jags Week 9 opponent. Coming up next, this date in football history and the Honda drive around the NFL.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by Bob Roberts First Coast Roofing. On this date, November 6th, 1995, one of the most hated men at least by any single franchise, would happen to be Art Modell. He announced on that date that he is moving the Cleveland Browns to Baltimore for the 1996 season. About 5 years later, the Ravens, as they were newly minted, were winning the Super Bowl. That could have been the Browns. Who knows how it would have played out had they stayed in Cleveland. Nevertheless, an interesting birthday list today. I found it interesting anyway. 1964, we go back. The first one, Eric Kramer. Long time, just kind of a journeyman, backup quarterback, hung around for quite a while, played a lot with the Bears and the Detroit Lions. Born in this state in 1976 and passing away on April 22nd, 2004. Pat Tillman hung up the spikes with the Arizona Cardinals as a rising young star, it appeared, in the National Football League, and was inspired by the events of 9/11 and thereafter to go sign up for the military and go fight across the seas, and ended up giving his life in Afghanistan in a friendly fire incident, which doesn't make it any less heroic. It's just a shame that the United States military felt the need to try to dress up his death as something other than it was. People die in friendly fire incidents. It doesn't make the sacrifices that Pat Tillman or anybody else makes any less heroic and
certainly
valiant.
Not.
So,
by the way, just 5 days away from Veterans Day as well next week.
There you go. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, anything but heroic. Born in the state in 1989 in Bristol, Connecticut. One Aaron Hernandez celebrating his 26th year on this earth, or the anniversary of his birth 26 years ago behind bars right now. What is Aaron Hernandez doing right now? It is, what, 11 o'clock up
working
there?
Working out.
Is he on the yard? Yeah. Is he out on the yard right now?
He's working out.
I'm not sure what he's doing right now. I don't really care. If I say for the Jacksonville Jaguars, the franchise, who's the franchise?
The franchise?
The franchise, right now, for this team, right now. Who's the franchise?
Bortles?
Yes. If I say, though, The Rock, who would it be?
Dwayne Johnson.
If I'm talking Jaguars. If I say the anchor for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who would that be?
Paul Posluszny.
If I say the building block of the offensive line, who would that be?
Luke Joeckel.
All right. There you go. Happy birthday, Luke Joeckel. 24 years young, Tay. Only 24 years old for Luke Joeckel. So I think Luke has had a decent season, right? It hasn't been any kind of a train wreck season. He needed a step in the right direction this year. So happy birthday to Luke Joeckel. You share it with some interesting characters there, to be sure. This date in football brought to you by Bob Roberts First Coast Roofing. Re-roofs, repairs, if you have issues with wind damage, hail damage, any kind of damage with your roof, or maybe you're just in the market for a new one for your home or your business, call Bob Roberts at 287-7756, license number CCC056797 for First Coast Roofing. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The Detroit Lions started cleaning house yesterday as Martha Ford, the team's owner, fired both team president and the team's general manager. The Lions are 1-7, and it appears that Jim Caldwell will be allowed to finish the season there in Detroit. There's some talk there in that area that the Lions could part ways with quarterback Matthew Stafford this offseason as well. Stafford is just 27 years old. Johnny Manziel and the Cleveland Browns lost in Cincinnati last night 31-10, and after the game, Manziel said that he would absolutely like to remain the Browns starter. Cleveland is now 2-6, and since they aren't in the AFC South, they are six games behind the 8-0 Bengals in the AFC North. And the question has to be asked, is it time to just see what Manziel has if you're the Cleveland Browns in a season that appears it's going nowhere?
Why not? You know, to me, wouldn't you?
I would. I mean, he showed some promise last
terrible.
Night. No, he wasn't. I thought from last year when he was terrible that there's something there. You know, you can see how he makes some plays though, man. He's much faster than I ever really thought he was.
He really is, right? And that was one thing people say, oh, you're not going to be able to outrun guys in the pros. Well, he's still very fast for his position, and he's got some good speed. And when he runs the football, he just has an instinctiveness about him, Dave. You know, typically avoids big hits. Mm-hmm. He's still shifty enough to make guys miss at this level. You don't want to live and die with that in the NFL, but
no,
it's a
don't.
Nice weapon to have.
And he just tends to move around too much. You don't see him a lot of times just drop, you know, take that one hitch and let the ball go on time. Sometimes I've seen him back there where he's just kind of bouncing in place like four or five bounces, like he's just waiting for someone to get more open. And I'm like, dude, you got to let the ball go. Because if not, he just tends to run around, and he's going to take some shots. The more you just run around just, you know, haphazardly.
Well, and that's probably because he had so much success doing that. It's probably hard to really get that out of his game, or at least pare it down to where you're comfortable with it. If you're the Browns, though, can you be comfortable with Johnny Manziel? I think he took a step in the right direction, you know, going to rehab and doing this. And it looked like, by all accounts, it looks like from afar, he's taking his job more
seriously. He's going in the right direction.
But yet, you still have an incident a few weeks ago where he gets pulled over with alcohol in his breath, no charges, didn't appear to be impaired according to the officer on the scene. But, you know, conflicting reports. Did he put his hand on his girlfriend? Did he push her? Was there, you know, a borderline domestic violence or a full-blown domestic violence incident? And we'll never know because she's kind of recanted or changed her story, and the NFL's looked into it, and they don't have enough to go on. But in the back of your mind, if you're the Browns,
it's just too much going on.
Are you just worried that if we do put him out there?
Because, like you said, if you don't, you know, bring back Josh McCown, if you don't bring him back and you say, all right, this is your team, are you really comfortable? Like you're asking, are you really comfortable with that? Because at any moment, he could go back off the deep end, or, you know, be in the club and somebody says he did something. And, you know, it's just he does not give you that comfort that you want from your franchise starting. You're the guy quarterback.
Other side of the equation. And I understand where Tony's point of view was in this game. He thought Cleveland would win the game. More, not so much what Cleveland was bringing to the table, but what Cincinnati has failed to bring to the table in big moments, in primetime performances, such as last year with Cleveland coming in and really just knocking them silly. I believe that was that the game Thursday night? I think it was when the Jags were in London that week, right? I believe it was, because I came on at like some ridiculous hour over there, and I watched it. I think I watched that one. But is Andy Dalton, people won't ever feel that he's reached whatever level he's going to reach until he wins in the postseason, but is he answering questions as much as he can for you right now about him?
I mean, he is, but he also did this at the same time last year. I mean, they were red hot last year. They might not have been undefeated this whole time, but they went into the playoffs as, man, who is going to stop this team? And then you find out it's them. They stopped themselves. Right. So he is answering a lot of questions because he is doing a lot of great things, but it still is going to come down to the playoffs because, like I said, he was red hot going into the playoffs, and then he got to the playoffs and started playing like a guy that was just pulled off the streets. And you know, you actually want me to start in this game and play, and it's a playoff game. Oh my gosh, you can see
what an honor.
Yeah, exactly. So I think he's doing great, but I mean, is he another Peyton Manning where he does great all season long and then gets to the playoffs and struggles? Is it going to be
history says yes. So
is it going to be three more years of great regular seasons and then finally getting that Super Bowl kind of like Peyton Manning did, where it took him like nine seasons before whatever it was to get there? So it's gonna take a pretty good run in the playoffs for me to say, all right, he's there now.
Yeah, and you're in an AFC this year where it feels like you could go 13-3 and be the three seed.
Right.
I mean, that's what it feels like right now. And I know those teams play. I know at least Denver plays Cincinnati and New England still. So we'll see how those games play out. But there's really not much. I mean, it's so front-loaded right now in the conference that Cincinnati could find themselves in the playoffs and have an opportunity against a very mediocre team in the AFC, because whoever the sixth seed is, I mean, who's that going to be? Is it the Jets? Is it Pittsburgh would be a little bit scary if they got into the playoffs.
Either one of those teams can be scary if Oakland, they're playing good football.
I mean, Oakland's still in the middle of this thing. Right. They'd be in today. Oakland's the sixth started today.
Aren't they the five? I think they're the five.
I thought the Jets were the... No, they would be because they just beat them head-to-head. So, yeah, I mean, that's who you're looking at right now. But you could be a team that goes 12-4 and winds up as a three seed. We haven't seen that kind of dominance wind up as a three a lot.
Well, if they go 12-4... that will be an epic collapse at this point, right?
Yeah.
I mean, 4-4 in your last eight games, regardless, and it may not matter. If you get down to week, you know, 16, it may be, you may be locked out of one of the top two seeds if you're the Cincinnati Bengals, or for that matter, if you're the Denver Broncos or whoever.
And you might not be playing some of your guys to get into the playoffs healthy.
That's true. So. Hey, hush your mouth. They're all playing on my fantasy team in week 16. All right.
I'd say whatever they've done in the past, they should not do. So if they've been a team that rests guys late in the year, play them.
Keep playing.
Switch it up. But the one thing that strikes me about them is they are very balanced when they're on top of their game. Because
they are.
You've got a great receiver. A.J. Green, going into yesterday, was on pace for the most yards and catches in his career. And it just seems like he's not having a big year.
Like he haven't really heard much from him.
Right. He only had the two 100-yard games. He had one that went over 200, and then he had another one last week. But you've got him, you got Marvin Jones, you got Mohamed Sanu. Now Tyler Eifert is becoming the guy that they thought they were getting when they drafted him. And you got that two-headed backfield.
Two dynamic running backs.
Offensively,
and their defense
great
is
balance.
Really good.
I mean, Geno Atkins now is back to being the guy he was before he tore his ACL.
I mean, and who would have thought that, what's the defensive back that feels like he's been
Reggie Nelson?
No, but he's still playing.
I don't know. I don't know who you're talking about. Pac-Man.
Like, who would ever thought he would still be, you know, a top defensive back? I mean, he's still balling himself, and I mean,
I think Perfect brings a degree of nastiness, and you know that edge he plays on.
The whole defense seems like they have just a little bit of an edge, a little nastiness.
Go down to Nugent, you know, their kicker. I think he's, you know, one of the more consistent guys in the National Football League. I mean, on paper they look very balanced, but it doesn't matter. How do you match up with New England? How do you match up with Denver? And can you play your best game?
Can you play your best ball
January?
Yep.
When it comes down to playing another team that is playing their best ball.
But they're feeling pretty good right now.
They do. They have to feel good. They still got Arizona this year. They got Pittsburgh one more time. And their matchup with Denver is in Denver. It's the final Monday night game of the season, week 16.
Wow.
So it's the week before last. So that could be for the two seed.
It really could. You could be playing for your bye right there. That is a huge potential game. And I don't know what's worse, Tony, knowing that they're going to rest guys and you don't put them in your lineup, or putting them in the lineup against Denver's defense and getting nothing out of them, but you're forced to play A.J. Green. That could be even worse in week 16. All right, we will come back. Let's hear a little bit more from Gus Bradley. Let's hear a little bit from Bob Babich as well. If you'd like to get in today, 641-1010 is the phone number. The question of the day, just asking you for your three keys to victory for the Jacksonville Jaguars this week. And you can tweet at us. You can post on the Facebook page. You can text us on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line as well. It's a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Tony Smith here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. What'd you find in the kitchen here?
Got some snacks here that I needed.
You need a little
really
pick
bad.
Me up. Huh?
I did.
It's Food Truck Friday here. Tony Davis mentioned that.
Yeah.
We never really, at least you and I, we always do the TV show on Fridays, the Your Jacks Fantasy Football Show, which you can catch this weekend tomorrow night at 11 and Sunday morning at 11:30. But so we're always jetting out of here pretty quick after the show on Friday, so we don't stick around for Food Truck Friday. But they bring in a bunch of area food trucks. It's quite a popular little endeavor these days, the whole food truck industry, isn't it?
It is. I think it's a really cool thing, but you almost kind of got to be in a city where you're walking around and you can stop at one. You don't want to have to drive to the food truck.
It is interesting, right? But I guess if you're going to go to a place where they have a bunch of them congregating together, makes a little bit more sense.
It does.
Food truck fights, you know. Because, you know, I would imagine look, they've got a food truck TV show. Probably have a bunch of them on Food Network. We love the Food Network in our house.
I love Food Network, too.
I don't know what the name of the show is. Chopped is probably our number one that we watch these days. The original Iron Chef was the best because of the theater that went along with it. You know what I'm talking about?
Like, I do, but I never got into those shows.
The Japanese version of Iron Chef was so good. I mean, I don't even know what that guy was saying. Ali Cuisine, which just means good food or something like that. I don't know. Something like that. But that was a phenomenal show back in the day. Chopped is pretty good, though. I don't mind it. My wife's all into the Project Runway. And they had their season finale last night.
Wow.
Yes. And now they've got
to watch TV.
Now they're having Project Runway Junior starting up next week with like 15 and 16 year old aspiring fashion designers. So I'm sure I will be forced to partake in that at some point.
Well, I wanted to see the kids' Food Network deal where they were bringing kids in and having them go against some of the top chefs.
Yeah, like the little mini masters. Yeah,
I thought that was pretty cool.
I haven't gotten into that. Who are these kids that are so accomplished when they're 15 years old, man?
I don't know.
Their parents own restaurants.
15 years old, I was thinking of what excuse can I come up with to not go to school today because I didn't do my homework. That was pretty much all my plans were. How quickly can I get out of class at the end of the day and get on to doing whatever it is that is not school-related. Moving along, let's hear more from Gus Bradley and a little bit from Bob Babich here, picking up where we left off from the Gus Bradley show last night. By the way, Gus off the practice field today. Tony Rhino-Halloran giving some updates as far as the injury report. Let's go to that first. What do you got as far as the injuries for the Jags?
Yeah, both Zane Beatles and Josh Sample officially going to be listed as questionable. I know it sounded like Zane Beatles expects to play this weekend. Not so sure about Sample in that same regard. Marquise Lee limited in practice today for the Jags, which is the first time he's been out on the field since Monday doing anything.
But
he is officially listed as doubtful for this weekend. Marquise, when asked about it, basically said, "I'm hoping to get back next week, and then I'll have 8 games that I can play this season and still have an impact." So Marquise Lee is not going to play Sunday.
I would take 8 games out of him right now.
Whether they're not officially listing him as out, he's doubtful. And Gus said, "We'll see how he feels in 2 days." Marquise Lee, the way he sounded, said, "I'll see you in a week."
See you next week, guys.
That's what it sounded like.
I wouldn't even want him to come into the game as there's a chance. There's not a chance. I want them to say, "This kid is 100% healthy. He's ready to go. He's been practicing great. Let's get out there and watch him ball out."
He needs a bionic leg is what he needs. Or two. You know the remake in the $6 Million Man? Have you heard this?
Yeah.
Mark Wahlberg is going to be in it. It's going
to
be called,
I used to watch that show.
Do you know what it's going to be called?
No.
It's going to be the $6 Billion Man this time around.
Because of inflation.
But seriously, inflation, because I read a story about this, is geeking out now, that $6 million back then is the equivalent of like $33 million. But it doesn't have quite the cachet to say like the $34.6 million man, $6 billion man. I don't know. He might have some kind of stealth missile in his leg or something like that when it's all done.
So it's going to be part RoboCop a little bit too then?
I don't know. Well, okay. I mean, he was already.
I kind of like it to be like a retro movie. Like, do it like it is the $6 million, and set it in that same like 60s, 70s setting.
With the same little
music
and everything?
You know what, though? I think the guy who did Jump Street is doing this, so it may be it may go that way.
Ooh,
yeah.
So they may
go like the comedic aspect.
As 21 Jump Street, because I love those shows.
You like those movies?
Oh my gosh, it's so funny. It took me the longest time to watch the first one because I kept thinking, "Oh, this is dumb. Who wants to watch this?" And I finally watched it, and tears were coming out.
It was pretty funny. I got to admit, I'm not a big slapstick comedy kind of guy, but I found those pretty funny. Shut up. Really? Duh. We hear that every time. Whatever happened to that guy? Is it John Greco? Remember the guy? It was Johnny Depp. Was it John Greco? Was that the other guy on the original Jump Street? What happened to him? Holly Robinson Pete did quite well for herself.
She did.
I don't know. He was in 21 Jump Street. He was in the movie. They were both in it at the end. Yeah. They were both in it there at the end at some
prior
point.
Prior to that, what has this guy been up to, man?
I don't know, nothing.
Hopefully he's living off his residuals. But I used to love Steve Austin, $6 Million Man.
Oh, well, I thought you talked about 21 Jump Street back in the day.
No,
I
used to watch that $6 Million Man back in the day. I used to love it. You had the Steve Austin action figure. It had the hole in the back of his head. You could look through his bionic eye, and it was like 2x magnification.
Whoa,
man. It's crazy. All right, let's get back to Gus Bradley here. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah, Marquise Lee. Could he get some bionic legs by next week? Probably not, but Shad Khan does have the money if he wanted to go that route. Let's go to Gus talking about things that you can work on in the bye week other than getting a little bit healthier.
Sure. I think some things would take place is like one of the questions I think you asked off the air was the timing with Julius and Blake Bortles, you know, to get that up to speed. So that's where a bye week is important. And that extra Monday practice, you get, to work on those timing things that are taking place. So, you know, Julius was out for quite some period of time. So you utilize that time to get the timing issues worked out. So those type things are also taken care of. So it's not that guys are coming back and now they're you're completely healthy, there should be no issues as far as that. Well, now, fortunately, we can use this practice time to speed up some of that process.
So are you seeing that?
Yeah.
The chemistry with Blake and Julius.
Yeah, you know, in certain routes. And, again, you can't go out there and run 100 routes and do that. You got to be smart. But you're starting to see that. And Julius is starting to feel good, and Blake, and along with the other guys, too, that are getting reps.
What did you make of last week? They really didn't seem like they're on the same page when they played Buffalo. But just the week prior, 7 catches, more than 70 yards, and a touchdown for Julius Thomas. So was it just what was the issue, and what has been the issue?
There could be a number of things, but I just probably think just a different defense, different set of game plans that you're going against this team, and we're just off today. For whatever reason, we're off. But luckily, he was on at the right times with the other guys.
Gus Bradley last night with Jeff Loggeman here on 1010XL 92.5 FM on the Gus Bradley Show was also asked about the injury concerns he has. We know Beatles and Sample have both been listed as questionable after his press conference today, but he talked about Beatles, Sample, and Josh Evans, and all three of them having been limited in practice. Does that concern him going into this weekend?
No, you know, I think we'll keep evaluating him as we go on. You know, we'll meet and, you know, discuss as a coaching staff. We got the training report now, so after today's practice. And some of these guys we got to keep evaluating. We'll evaluate again tomorrow and keep going through the week.
Is that a big part? Like, because once you go through two practices or 2 days or have a full practice or a partial practice, is Friday morning a big moment for that?
Well, it is. I think that you get a chance to evaluate where guys are, because after today's practice, you can kind of, all right, this guy has no chance to play on Sunday. You can kind of come up with that conclusion with some of the guys. This week, that's not the case. I think we need another couple days really to see where they're at.
For most of them. Anyway, for most of them. This one interesting, I think, from Gus. Caller called in last night, and I thought this was a great opportunity because this is something that it's difficult for me to give you a good explanation of this question. The caller wanted to know, what is the source for having 12 men on the field and the issues that they've had with it, and what do you do as a coaching staff to correct it? Here's what Gus Bradley had to say.
First of all, the 12 men on the field, there are some communication issues. When you're on defense, you have different packages. You know, a base package, a nickel package, a dime package, a bandit package, you know, and the substitutions is critical. And we had some communication errors, just signaling in guys and how they ran on the field to let the other guys know what package we're in. And, you know, we tried to address that on defense. And I think the last week we cleaned that up. But it spread over into special teams. And what we found out was that these substitution, these different packages we're using on defense, you know, creates a situation where we really got to be on it. Players really have to be on it and understand their roles and the depth charts. And you go over it and over and over it. But sometimes it's an injury here, an injury there that takes place at the last second. And you have those. But there's really no excuse, Chris. I mean, when you look at it, I mean, it's, well, let me try to justify it. Well, there is no justifying. When you got 12 men on the field, it's wrong. And when there's not 11 guys on the field and there's 10, it's wrong. And, you know, that's the areas that we need to address as a team. And not to put it on the players.
You work on that all week long too, right?
Well, you do. But I think, you know, like defensively, went from substituting on the field to where now in practice all substitutions take place from the sideline to make it all game-like situations. Now, I've been a coordinator before, and there was no need to do that. But with this, we've seen this problem show up. So we took it to that level, and now everything's from the sideline.
And make another emphasis on it.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, so I think it's talk's one thing, but action is another. And these things have to be cleaned up. So really no excuse for it other than, hey, we got to get it corrected.
That's an interesting way of dealing with it, though, as a coaching staff. That is something tangible that you could say, all right, here's what we're doing. You know, instead of having a free-flowing kind of guys just walk into the huddle, and you see, you know how it is at practice sometimes. Got to really just check in and get in the habit of that and knowing what personnel is supposed to be on the field. Ultimately, Dave, as Gus Bradley said, we're not trying to put this just on the players here. Is this an issue for the players? I mean, should this be a case of, you know, when certain formations or packages are called, you're supposed to be on the field or you're not supposed to be on the field? And, I mean, whose ultimate responsibility does that fall to?
Well, usually when this happens, like he just explained a lot of it, usually it's just bad communication. So a guy's running out there, and he's supposed to be telling another guy to get out or whatever the package is, and that guy is just locked in, and he's not paying attention for whatever reason, and so you get caught. That's usually what happens on defense. Offensively, you have a guy also running into the huddle, and the quarterback is supposed to be standing outside the huddle so that everybody can get in, and if there is, it's just 11 guys in there until you see, hey, so-and-so, you need to be getting out of the huddle. So that's how you eliminate those things offensively. What happens with special teams is a guy gets hurt on defense, and he's getting checked out on the sideline, so his backup has to be ready to go in for the special teams, whatever it is. But then that guy, he's like, I'm good. He takes himself and throws himself back in the game, didn't tell his backup.
Right.
So it just, usually it's because guys have an injury and they're looking for their backup. The backup isn't ready at that time, and so you don't have enough guys, or the backup is out there or running out there, and now the other guy is saying, I'm good. I want to still play. He runs out there trying to yell to his backup to come out, and you get caught. And other times it's just the players making mistakes, and sometimes the coaches make mistakes. It's just a lack of communication a lot of times. All those reasons were just communication errors.
And it's something that should be mostly under your control. It's not like it's never going to happen. Every team gets it occasionally, but it should be at a minimum.
It really should, especially at this time in the season where, you know, you're already, you know, 8 games in and, you know, guys are all pretty much set. When you've gone through as many injuries as we've had, you know, you could see how the order of things, the depth chart and all that kind of stuff can kind of be confused after a while, but it's you're a professional team. It shouldn't happen this many times.
Let's do this. Let's take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll hear from Bob Babich a little bit about what the Jags defense faces going up against the Jets this week. We'll look at the fan feedback spotlight asking you for your keys to victory for the Jets this week. We've got a Richard Greco update from Duval Doom. You knew you could count on somebody out there in the audience to give us the update. Richard Greco, the other guy on Jump Street, according to Doom, made softcore porn for Skinamax for a while. As quickly as he answered that, it seems like Doom knew that off the top of his head. I don't know how you missed him, Dave, as much time as you spend with your cable television. It happens, I suppose. So good to know that he's doing well out there and he's continuing a career in film. All right, there you have it. It is a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Since 1905, Claude Nolan Cadillac serving as the preferred Cadillac dealer here in Northeast Florida. Call them at 642-5111, 642-5111, or better yet, stop by 4700 Southside Boulevard. Tell them Mike Dempsey sent you. You're going to love Claude Nolan Cadillac. Check them out online at claudenolan.com. Back with more Jaguars today in a moment on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Well, that was a very appetizing conversation we just had a moment ago. What's the name of your bald friend there on the
Andrew air? Zimmerman.
Don't want to watch that show, man.
Called Bizarre Foods.
Well, apparently so. You're telling us about the one where they ate the stuff with maggots crawling on it because the maggots, like 600 years ago, indicated to people like in the Middle Ages that the food itself was still edible if the maggots were willing to eat it. We ain't in the Middle Ages anymore, Tony.
It was like goat cheese in a cow's stomach.
That sounds weird.
What David described. Yeah.
That sounds weird.
It was goat cheese in a cow's stomach. It was fresh.
That's already weird itself.
It was as fresh as it gets.
I thought I was being brave when I tried asparagus for the first time a few years ago. It's quite tasty. Thank you very much.
A few years ago? It was the first time you ever had asparagus.
I remember the first time I had asparagus was at SEC Media Days. Because it had to be at Ruby Tuesdays, because that's the only place we ever ate. Hacker and I were at Ruby Tuesdays, and the first time I ever had asparagus, I was just so hungry, I'm like, all right, fine, I'll eat it. And it was good.
Yeah, it's good.
I liked it.
I love grilled asparagus.
I did not know that until I tried it for the first time. All right, there you have it. All kinds of different directions this show is taking today. Let's turn to the direction of the Jags defensive coordinator. A couple of quick thoughts from Bob Babich, meeting with the media yesterday, starting with talking about Ryan Fitzpatrick and what his play has meant to the Jets.
I think that he's an extremely intelligent player. I think that he understands defenses. He understands what they want to do offensively. He understands what he can do and what he can't do. I think he's a true pro, you know, and he's playing like that. And, you know, I think he does a great job. I think, you know, the offensively, they're doing a great job. I think Coach Bowles has put together a philosophy that they're going to run the ball and then be really good in the pass game with play action passes and that type of stuff. So I think they do a great job.
Goes to show you that pure intelligence is not enough to be a successful NFL quarterback. I mean, the guy is arguably the smartest quarterback that ever played in the league. Went to Harvard. Tony, was he perfect on the Wonderlic, or did he get a 49 out of 50?
I think it was 49.
Like the highest recorded score by any NFL player that we're aware of.
But he can't beat his son in completing the Rubik's Cube. Have you seen that?
Really? No, I have not.
Yeah, there's a video about 2 months ago of his son and a Washington Post reporter. There's a video. And his son does it in like a minute and 40 seconds, and Fitzpatrick did it in like 2:10.
I've never been able to do the Rubik's Cube, man.
I've gotten one side.
Oh, yeah, I've gotten like a couple of sides.
One side.
You're like,
but then to get another side, I got to mess up that one side. So
right. Now, remember when they came out with the, like a pyramid?
Yeah.
That was fun. I could get that one occasionally because it had only four sides. So yeah. It was easier than the Rubik's Cube. I've never been very good with that whole kind of thing. Well, now we know Ryan Fitzpatrick's kid has got to keep an eye on, apparently.
Yeah, if he's going to play football, we'll see if he follows the same career path. Bob Babich, the Jaguars defensive coordinator, speaking to the media yesterday, also talked about this Jaguars defense and trying to force some turnovers.
Oh, we have a technical error.
Sounds like the click of the click not working.
I heard a glitch or a click there that would indicate we're probably not going to hear Bob Babich talk about turnovers. I was not paying particular attention because Tyler just instant messaged me the link to watch the Fitzpatricks have a Rubik's Cube off. Let's see what Bob Babich had to say, if this works, if he felt like the Jags were more creative when they did employ the blitz against the Buffalo Bills. Nope. All right, we will not hear. What do you think Bob would have said about that, Tony?
Well, yeah, they had some success.
You know. Thank you, Bob. Appreciate that
Bills,
very much.
You forced a couple turnovers that led directly to points, and hopefully we can find the key to do that again this weekend.
I am glad we are closing this program strongly today.
Strong.
Today, the Tom Bush Family Dealership's fan feedback question of the day is what it is pretty much every Friday. What are your three keys to victory for the Jacksonville Jaguars this weekend? Tony, give us a sampling of what we got, please.
From Paolo, stop Ivory, get Julius Thomas going, no dumb penalties. From Jason, press wide receivers successfully, pressure up the middle with some Derek Marks, Davis Blitzer stunts, and spread them out and run. From Gold Chris, Chef Jags, make Fitz give a thumbs down, make Revis Island look dumb, and TJ and JT in the red zone. From Daniel, Yeldon rushes for 100+, defensive turnover, no Bortles pick. From Irish Jaguar, hit the quarterback, limit the mistakes on both sides of the ball, get Yeldon going early. From Will, defensive backs pick 2, defense scores 2 touchdowns, kicking game contributes. From Black Dog, play angry, go full throttle, bust up Fitz. From Eric, be smart in the passing game, blitz a hurt quarterback more, no special teams gaffes. And from Demetrius, bench Zane Beatles, give Denard a timeshare in the backfield, and unleash Ryan Davis.
All right, here's a few things coming in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, not necessarily answering the question today, but that's fine. Most recently, and going backwards, there's an app to solve the Rubik's Cube in the App Store, but what's the point of that?
That's stupid.
What do you? Right, I got to hire someone to put together that puzzle for me. Too,
exactly.
I will probably not do that. I don't know what fun that would be. Maybe I guess if it teaches you how to do it, and then you can impress your friends or your Harvard-educated father.
It's like these kids with their video games, you know, where you can just go online and watch the walkthrough of how to beat something. It's
my
like,
son.
What's the point?
That is my son to a T.
Well, at our time, it was you got to go buy a magazine, and it gave you a bunch of cheat codes and that kind of stuff.
Well, I had a Game Genie, but I would not use my Game Genie until I had beaten said game.
Yeah.
And if I got to a point where it was like with Punch-Out, where I was like, I'm never going to beat Tyson. Like, I'm never going to do it.
I need some help.
So I would get the Game Genie just to have the half the feeling of beating the game once, and it was hollow. It was empty. It still feels not great, but that's the only way I ever did it.
Let's see what else we have here. What's going on with Cindric Marks? Well, nothing, which is good, right? I mean, Cindric Marks hopefully is getting healthier and feeling better week by week and, you know, getting past the mental hurdles.
Getting his legs back under him, getting, like you said, past that mental hurdle.
So no news is good news.
Staying healthy the rest of the season, he'll keep getting better and better as the season goes on.
This question coming in as well, how many games must a player play in a season for it to count as 1 year in their pension? I don't think it's a matter of games played, right? If you're on IR, for instance, does that count towards your pension, right? If you're on injured reserve for the whole year?
I believe so.
As long as you're not suspended,
I think so, yeah.
Right, as long as you show up, because I think it's like six or seven, right? You can show up if you're holding out. If you want that accredited season to go to toll your contract and count it, I think you have to show up for like the last six games of the year, something like that. Doesn't mean you have to play.
Yeah,
but you have to be available to the team.
Four games in or something like that.
It's not a high threshold, but regardless, for a guy like Marquise Lee, as long as he is there and he's not, you know, as long as he's in good standing.
Oh, yeah, he's on the team.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's if you get cut after the first week or something like that. You know, they bring you in, then they cut you.
Then we get one. Can we please stop talking about Marquise Lee until he's set to play? Not you guys. Okay, but we just were. Every day. Quote, Marquise Lee was held out of practice. I think the fans will settle down. They just spare us that he's still not practicing every single day. It keeps things negative instead of just focusing on who's producing on the field. Well, it's news. I mean, you know, that's who's not practicing is as newsworthy as who is practicing. I mean, we're not going to sit here and list 50 guys who did practice today because we can't see practice for the most part. And so what we get is in reports from the head coach, from some of the players, not going to give you very much, nor should they. And so it is newsworthy and noteworthy when a guy doesn't practice, particularly a guy who has not been able to for, you know, most of the season, Marquise Lee. So we will continue to mention Marquise Lee, whether he plays or not. And I get it. You don't want to dwell on it, but, you know, it's something, you know, we got plenty of time throughout the course of the week to mention Marquise Lee and still get to some of the guys who are performing well this weekend. What does your gut tell you, Tony, here as we are on Friday afternoon? I know you said you were having a tough time getting a feel for this football game.
I really am. I think it comes down to the fourth quarter between these two teams and whether the Jags make the couple plays they made against Buffalo or don't. And I'm not sure how confident I am in this Jaguars team to make those kind of plays. I think we've seen a Jets team that can go toe-to-toe with that Patriots team, so it certainly makes me feel like they're the better team coming into this when they're playing at home. So I expect that the Jets will win this contest on Sunday, somewhere in the neighborhood of 23-17, something like that.
Yeah, I would, if I'm having to pick it with my head, I think the same thing here, that the Jets can beat you with the pass, they can beat you with the run. They could potentially, when they're on their game, stop the run, stop the pass pretty well. Makes you wonder how they piled up three losses this year. Well, some of it was Chris Ivory missed one game, and in the games he hasn't been effective, Dave, those are the games that the Jets have really struggled. So I agree with what Rich Amini said earlier. You got to stop Chris Ivory. I don't know if that means you have to commit eight to the box right away, because Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker, if they're both on the field, can certainly hurt you. What do you think? What kind of chance you give the Jags this week?
You know, I just think the way that the Jets got beat last week out in Oakland, they're fired up. They're mad. They're at home, so they got the energy of the crowd, energy of the stadium. I still feel like the Jags have a chance, so that's a good thing. But I just think the way that this team, that the team up there is built, that if they come out and play anywhere close to playing a good game, then it's going to be really tough for us to win.
I think this game, if they were to win it, would start to change people's minds about what this team is capable of and where they may end up going this year, because it is a team with a winning record. They haven't won many of those games, certainly on the road in the Gus Bradley era here. So, hey, the opportunity is there for the Jags. Now you got to go out there, execute, make the most of it, and make those plays and come back with your third win of the season. All right, he is David Garrard along with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. We are wrapping up. Thanks again to Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor here on Jaguars Today. The elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac for you, only one step away. You can begin to build your lasting relationship by logging on to ClaudeNolan.com.
NFL.com or call them at 642-5111. 642-5111 for Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Thanks again to Rich Cimini of ESPN talking Jets here with us. For Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, for David Garrard and Tony Smith, I'm Mike Dempsey. Signing off for Jaguars Today, we'll say hello to the boys of XL Primetime. Coming up next here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flap.
Woo! That's great job!